Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of QS Cast. This is going to be a big episode. We are talking about Battle for Zendikar, the Pro Tour specifically. This is going to be the big showing where we get to see how well these cards work together and what the pros have come up to break the format with. This week we're going to be talking about what our best speculation targets are for the Pro Tour and how we see the general state of Battle for Zendikar in the format. So I am going to throw this to you, Kelly. Why don't you tell us our big secret for our insiders about what we're doing for them?
Well, I got sick of sitting at home watching Twitch TV, and so I booked a ticket to Milwaukee, booked a hotel room, and so I'm going to go, and I'm going to be on the floor from round one onward, making sure that I know what's going on, and so that all of our insiders know what's going on. I'll be there bright and early, Friday morning, try to get some tech for you guys Thursday night after I get in. But, yeah, I'm just going to try to spectate every single match, get a sense of who's on what, see if I can get some interviews with cool guys and learn sort of what cards they're looking out for, what cards overperformed against them, things like that. So basically just trying to take it to the next level, get us all better information. But yeah, I'm just done watching the same coverage everybody else is. I mean, we take this sort of stuff really seriously. So from here on out, we're going to try to get to as many of these as we possibly can.
And I know that we are, I'm pretty sure we're the only site sending a reporter to cover it. We're definitely the only financial site. So if we possibly can, if there's anything to report, Kelly will be reporting from there. And in the past, we've relied on pros texting us stuff between rounds, which has been kind of helpful, but I think it's going to be a whole different category with Kelly there. So if something breaks out, we should know about it pretty quickly. That brings us to the question of whether things will break out. And Chad, I wanted to bring you on and ask you about what cards you think are the most sure bets in Battle for Zendikar that you can guarantee we'll see play at the Pro Tour.
Whew. Well, I guess the sure thing is probably Gideon, Ally of Zendikar. 2 weeks in a row, that is really the forerunner of what is already being played in Battle for Zendikar by a wide margin of any other Battle for Zendikar cards, sans the lands. So, I mean, lands and Battle for Zendikar really are like the surefire cards I see in Battle for Zendikar. And I think that's just because of just an overall low impact of the set in general. Maybe we just haven't seen, I'm sure we've seen the cards in front of us, but maybe just not the angle that the pros are looking at them. So I don't know. It's tough because really Battle for Zendikar, there is like some notable cards, but maybe they're just not being utilized in a way in these past 2 weeks. Again, it's a small sample size, but maybe they're just not being utilized in a way that is very obvious or what the pros view as obvious. But I think what is obvious is that Gideon and the Battlelands are what is really impacting Standard from Battle for Zendikar.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot that's making waves right now. Like we discussed when we were going over our show notes before we went live, I think a lot of what Battle for Zendikar did to Standard was remove Theros and M15. You don't have all the linear strategies from Theros block. You don't have things like Ravel Master from M15. And so as a result, what's happening is that Standard is being decided by what's good in Khan's block plus Origins. So you've got that Jeskai deck from Khan's block plus Jace from Origins. You've got the Abzan decks, Hardened Scales or otherwise. Again, mostly just linear decks from Khan's block that get a few bonuses. My Abzan list is playing Gideon, but they're only in the sideboard, which is a conscious but awkward choice because they're just not great in every matchup in every circumstance. So I'd rather play the most aggressive and linear deck as possible. Gideon actually isn't that aggressive of a card because you generally have to try to protect him so you can go off with him. But he's still great in certain matchups when you have to grind. Beyond that, I mean, what's really sad is Woodland Wanderer just is completely outclassed by Siege Rhino, even though it can get bigger. So that card just never even made it into the deck. I'd rather have a 4-5 with Trample that steals life than, say, a 6-6 Trample with Vigilance. It's a great card, and when Siege Rhino rotates out, I think it'll be a lot better. But that creature is really, really oppressive right now, and it's keeping a lot of good cards out of the spotlight. Same is true for Undergrowth Champion. He started as a 4-of in the main deck, then went down to a 3-of, then moved to a 4-of in the sideboard, then got cut from the sideboard. He's just not what that deck needs. There are just better things to do on 3 that are more powerful fundamentally. Anaphens of the Foremost comes to mind. But the problem with Undergrowth Champion is that damage shield sounds really enticing, but there's so many ways like Abzan Charm and Murderous Cut to kill or exile him that it's just not as powerful and as game-ending as it looks. Like, you can certainly go off with him, but it's just not as consistent as it needs to be. And my number one criteria for a deck this early in the season is consistency, consistency, consistency. I mean, it needs to have an aggressive game plan that it can execute on curve every single game, game in, game out. And the mana has to be good. The creatures have to be all above basic power level, and there's just no room for weak cards or cards that are more situational, even in the sideboard. So, yeah, I think that the real key here is that Khan's linear strategies, and Doug, you also mentioned like a Grixis Dragons deck, which you actually like you to elaborate more on. But yeah, Khan's linear strategies seem like they're the ones that are going to be dominant because there just isn't enough synergy with Battle for Zendikar yet.
Yeah, and you make great points, Kelly, and I think that's why we're seeing so many price increases in Khan's block cards, especially leaning towards Dragons of Tarkir, obviously, because they're around a lot longer. But even Khan's cards, like Khan's of Tarkir, the set, Anaphenza, Mantis Rider, Wingmate Rock, those cards are just what people are playing right now. And just because it's been opened a lot, I mean, people still are playing with the cards and want the cards to play standard because there's just not anything from Battle for Zendikar that's hugely affecting standard. So you made a great point as to what the implications of Battle for Zendikar are on standard, is that it just gave Khan's block better mana. And basically standard is just revolving around what's good in Khan's block right now because, right. You know, when you just have Gideon, and that's really the premier card of the set and really the only card worth a damn right now, that's what you're going to get. Even, again, huge supply, the people still need the cards. So.
And the thing with Khan's is that we've been all repeating the mantra of, oh, it's one of the most open sets in Magic, but I mean, a year down the road, that stops mattering as much. I was trying to pick up some Siege Rhinos the other day, and like, they're getting a little harder to find. I'm not, you know, they're not going crazy, but like, I'm not big on spending cash for cards. I tend to go with, store credit or trade whenever I can. But, in this case, I just had to lay out the cash for some Rhinos. I didn't have any. But, yeah, like, fetch lands from Khan's are all expensive now. Hardened Scales is expensive. Siege Rhino is still expensive and probably has room to grow. Mantis Rider, Crackling Doom, all those cards that we said, these are great cards, but they're not worth a lot because Khan's got opened and they're not seeing tons of play. We can throw that all out the window now because those cards are seeing play. Those cards are starting to define a format, and I would be very surprised if we didn't see a ton of Mantis Riders and a ton of Crackling Dooms at the Pro Tour. Now, I'm not 100% sure that those are the cards that are going to dominate the Pro Tour, but people will be bringing them to play. And the ones that do show up to be tier one and crack the top 8 or even just the top 32 are cards that you want to pay very close attention to. The supply is there, but it's not as high as people think it is because we are over a year removed from cons. So just don't let that scare you anymore. That time is coming gone.
Yeah, it's just compounded that, again, not a lot of impact from Battle for Zendikar. People aren't looking for stuff from Battle for Zendikar, except for a few cards. And I do want to reiterate, like, you do have a point. Khan's was opened a lot. We are a year from Khan's. But there is a window of opportunity here in terms of looking at it from a financial lens.
Yeah, I think we're actually, like, right towards the end of that window, but I think it's still very much open.
Yeah, like Pro Tour is definitely going to give some opportunities. It'll probably be like that for a little while after Pro Tour. But Khan's and Fate Reforged are going to rotate soon, and I think buy lists are going to dictate that. But again, right now, people just want Khan's cards because that's what they need to play standard. So,
and they have capital available because they're not going crazy over the stuff in BFZ. You need a couple of lands. You might want your Gideons, but I mean, he's great, but I don't think he is like the key to the format. And I'll be very honest, casting a double colored card, not a multicolored, but like a double white card, is way harder than casting a three-color card in this format, because tri-lands, pain lands, fetch lands, getting that second color is often harder than getting the first of your third. And in my testing with my Abzan deck, which I'll be publishing this week, I found the mana was basically perfect, because I'm not playing Drana. I'm not playing Gideon in the main. I'm not playing any of the double colored stuff except Avatar of the Resolute, because that card's just too good. That's one of my favorite cards in Dragons, and I can't believe the card's still only $1. That's a $5 card, if you look at the power level, and it's in a set of powerful, powerful cards. But, anyway, we talked at length about that card on prior episodes, so I'll just leave it at that.
One of the decks that really interested me, when we were talking about the impact of battle and the impact of having effortless mana bases, was Ali Antrazi's, or Antrazi, I'm sorry, I killed your name, Ali. His five-color control deck, it came in ninth place at the Star City Standard Open. It's a really interesting deck. It's basically like, what do you get if you jam all five colors in a deck and play Jace and Siege Rhino and Hangar Backwalker and then round it out with Radiant Flames? And it's a pretty spicy brew. He does not run Bring Delight. He runs four Catacomb Sifter, which in a little bit of playing, we found that card was amazing because
I really like that card.
Yeah, getting the scry off that guy, like it's really easy to miss that third line of rules text because it's just a whole bunch of reminder text about what scry does. And whenever I read it, I first thought that was just dumb flavor text, and I don't see flavor text because I'm an awful spike and I'm not a Vorthos. So I ignored it, but it is a really good card, and it is three power for three mana. It can go wide. He runs some interesting stuff. I think, so my card going into this event is Dragonlord Dromoka, and it's currently about $8. It's sold out on Star City, which is pretty interesting. Why do I like Dromoka? It's because green-white Megamorph has a very hard time beating the deck. Or beating the card, rather. It's like people haven't remembered how good Baneslayer Angel was, and Dromoka is Baneslayer Angel, but
funny
it can't
story
be
funny about that. Doug, I think I was like on the forums or in one of your articles, you called it Baneslayer Dragon.
Yeah.
And I went back and reread the card, and I was like, wait a minute, this costs one more than Baneslayer, doesn't take double white, is bigger, and it has that bizarre, City of Solitude opponents can't cast spells during your turn thing, and I just looked at that and thought for a minute and was like, wait a minute, this card is secretly insane. So I picked up my singleton copy, do you like it at $8 as like a speculation? Because I don't think I'll play more than one, but if, you know, do you think it's the kind of card where I should have four just to have four?
Yeah, so Dromoka's not Ojutai, and Dromoka isn't going to be good in Modern outside of like the Hive Minds Summer Bloom decks, Amulet Bloom decks. But Dromoka is really good and Standard, in my opinion, as a foil to the other green-white Deathmist Raptor decks, because they're going to be trying to do the same thing you are, and it's going to be very hard for them to remove Dromoka, because they're going to... Basically, the way you got to do it is you got to Dromoka's command... Okay, so dragons should be immune from their own commands, but you should have to Dromoka's command your Deathmist Raptor with the Dragon Lord to kill it with the Death Touch. That's about the way you can knock it off. And that's really narrow. I guess you can Valorous Stance it too. But
well, there's a lot of good removal that can deal with
it. Huge.
There's a lot of good removal that can deal with it. Abzan Charm, Murderous Cut.
Yeah, but I mean specifically in the green-white mirror match.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, so you're going to have an answer to that if you're playing green-white Megamorph this weekend. And I don't know whether the answer is Mastery of the Unseen, where you just plan on gaining life that way, or whether the answer is Dromoka, but... I
like the answer being the big creature better than some cutesy life gain tricks.
Yeah, and I'm really big on Dromoka. I think it's a pretty good card, especially if you're running Den Protectors to buy it back, things like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that card just, if a 5/7 lifelinker is really, really scary stuff.
Yeah, and
so.
It may be the case, by the way, with the Bring to Light decks, that people realize that those decks are just better without Bring to Light. I mean, Jace Vryn's Prodigy is a really, really good card. I'm not making any news to anybody, but it could be a better card than Bring to Light in the Bring to Light deck. And the format cares a whole lot less about Siege Rhinos right now. So as you guys may have noticed, there were none in the top eight. So the Jeskai deck splashing black for Crackling Doom might be the deck going into this tournament, especially because flashing back a Crackling Doom off of a Jace is just incredible.
So I played against the Jeskai Black deck online with my Abzan deck, which has Siege Rhino. Actually, I'm calling my article this week All Roads Lead to Rhino, because I still very much believe that card is the dominant force in Standard. Yes, Jace is completely insane, and I think that if you can play both, go for it. But again, my style is very much play the most linear aggro deck you can, and in that context, Siege Rhino is the number one. Anyway, I played against the Jeskai Black deck, and it just took too long to get going. I mean, every time that they had a threat, I had a better threat and a better answer. I mean, if they take control of the long game, it's over. You just don't even bother trying to compete against it. But like Soulfire Grandmasters, by the time they got those online, I mean, they didn't have the mana to cast them, activate them, and cast a spell on the same turn, and I always had the removal spell. And the deck just doesn't put on enough pressure quickly enough, and that's really weird to say that because of cards like Mantis Rider and Crackling Doom. But, I will say that, Dromoka's Command is also very good against Crackling Doom because it does take a little of the sting out of it. But yeah, I think that the Demise of Siege Rhino is greatly, greatly underrated. I certainly understand that there weren't any in this top eight this past weekend, but I'm not trying to dog on anybody who competed in that one event, but like, that's not the Pro Tour. I mean, that's an event seeing what people were thinking about the format, but I mean, the Pro Tour is going to show us what's the real deal. So I'm not counting Siege Rhino out yet, and I think it's still one of the best creatures ever printed. Definitely the best creature in Standard, not counting Jace, and I think that it's got some room to grow, but not a ton. Let's talk about your Dragons, Grixis Dragons deck, because I think that the Silent Guards, Scorn, and Foul Tongue Invocation alone merit some consideration, as does Dragonlord Silumgar, who steals Planeswalkers.
Yeah. Okay, so Chaz, you have been bringing up Silumgar's Scorn a lot, and as a potential speculation target, and I think Dragons are still a good deck, but I don't think that Esper Dragons are good, because I don't think that I want to be running white for Ojutai. I don't think he does enough, but I think that you could run Grixis, and the thinking would be that you could run some number of Thunderbreak Regent to just play that game where your opponent, like, where you run your opponent out of cards in the first few turns, and then you just jam a Thunderbreak Regent on four and then protect it, which is pretty good. And then there's also Draconic Roar, which is basically Searing Blood when you reveal a dragon from your hand. So that is going to be pretty good removal. Dealing three damage for two mana is pretty good in this format right now. And you have good mana, and which is to say you have Bloodstained Mire and Polluted Delta. You don't have a blue-red land, in parentheses, yet, because you're going to get the tap land. But you still don't have anything fetchable. I mean, the blue-red man land, but the deck seems to have a lot. I don't know whether it can outcompete the Jeskai decks, and I also don't know because they make better use of Jace, and I think that this is going to be a Pro Tour all about either flipping a whole bunch of Deathmist Raptors or bringing Jace back, or like flipping Jace and using that a whole bunch. So I'm not quite sure where Grixis Dragons fits in there, but I still think a card like Foul Tongue Invocation is good. It's not the sure shot that Crackling Doom is, where it takes care of the biggest threat, but four life is pretty significant, and flashing that thing back off of a Jace is like, I guess it reminds me of Snapcasting a Timely Reinforcements. It looks really, really good to do. You also get Crux of Fate. You get Languish. So there are board control elements you can run in a Grixis Dragons deck if you want. Obviously, you have Radiant Flames, so it's...
Dragonlord Silumgar is huge, because if the format's all about Jace and to some lesser extent Gideon, or even Nissa, stealing a Planeswalker then activating its ability is, I mean... Man, that happened to me in testing. Someone actually stole my Ulamog with Dragonlord Silumgar, and I just conceded on the spot. I mean, that card, even if you get the removal off, it's still just, you're going to get value out of it no matter what.
Yeah, and Silumgar the Drifting Death is pretty good, too. I mean, it kills Monastery Mentor tokens. It chops up all the Hangerback Thopter tokens that somebody plays. Like, that's, by the way, reason enough to run Silumgar. Consider it. It shreds all the Dragon Fodder tokens from Atarka Red. So there's like a bunch of stuff that it's randomly good against, and also
it does. It has so many tools. The Grixis Dragons deck has so many tools, and like, just for transparency, I'm about 100 deep on the Fate Reforged version of Silumgar on Magic Online. He was a bulk rare, and I just thought he was too good to pass up. But like, you make a great point. Like, you've got access to Counterspell. You've got access to a Diabolic Edict that gains you life. You've got access to Searing Blaze again, and I mean, you can treat as a given the fact that you will always have a dragon either in hand and on the board. You can play around that, you can build around it. Brian DeMars was really clear about saying Thunderbreak Regent was one of the best cards in his SCG winning deck. I just picked up a couple of those from my own stock too. It's a 4/4 flyer for 4 mana. What can you do? Anything else is upside. And since it fits your tribal theme, the issue with the dragons is they're all expensive, but this is one of the least expensive dragons, and it's extremely powerful for its cost. So I think that there's a lot of potential to see where that deck goes. And, you know, pros are not afraid of brewing control decks, for the pro tour.
And, you know, so building on that, too, we talk with control decks about turning the corner, which is the point in the game where you have exhausted your opponent, you feel like you're in control, and now you need to put the game away. And being able to put the game away with a Thunderbreak Regent is really good, because even if you only cast it on six, you get to hold up Silumgar Scorn, which is great. You get to hold up a hard counter. I think Thunderbreak Regent is an underutilized control finisher right now, so I am eager to see how it plays. I mean, no, it doesn't have a great comes-into-play ability. It doesn't have haste. It doesn't sweep the board, but it's a very efficient flyer that you don't need to make contact with many times. It's like Geist of St. Traff. That card never needed to hit many times for it to be really good.
The other thing about that card is about Thunderbreak Regent is that it's going to be a 2-for-1 insofar as a bolt to the opponent's face is a sure thing if they're planning to remove it. So if you get that off, you know, whatever removal spell they use, unless it's an edict spell, you are getting your money's worth. Because they're losing a card, you're losing a card, they're taking damage, they're spending their turn to deal with it instead of attacking you. I mean, it's the kind of card that a control deck probably wants in order to, put early to mid, well, I should say mid-game pressure on while still being a competent defender and helping you grind your way to victory. I think it might be one of the more compelling cases for a Grixis Dragons control deck
The other reason I would even consider Dragons or a three-color control deck instead of five is that since your mana is so good in Grixis, you get to run like a 2 of Blighted Fen or Blighted Cataract, so that's the Diabolic Edict in the Inspiration land. And being able to run out of land and have a Diabolic Edict up is really, really good. We saw a little bit of it last week, a little bit of it 2 weeks ago. I think that Grixis is probably the only color combination that can be running that particular sort of land right now.
Yeah, I think if any uncommon is going to be chased, like a, Stoke the Flames, I think it's Silumgar Scorn. I mean, it's really almost a functional reprint of Counterspell in a format that hasn't seen Counterspell in a long time. It's not that hard to turn on with really good, viable dragons like you guys talked about. Thunderbreak Regent, Ojutai, Silumgar, either version of Silumgar. Either Grixis Dragons, Esper Dragons, Grixis Splash White for Ojutai. I mean, there's a lot of different variations of what the deck can actually play. It has access to a lot of cards. And you could be sure that Silumgar Scorn, rather, is going to be a 4 of in that deck. So, I mean, if it was any uncommon, I would pick it would be that one.
I should also be transparent here in saying that I own about 100 copies of Silumgar Scorn on paper. Card Kingdom has just had the most ridiculously low prices on that card for the last 2 months. And every time they restock, I just buy 20 more. Don't all go and do that, because those are mine. I'm going to still keep buying them. You guys can't have them, so I hope no one's listening to this. But actually, Chaz, you mentioned, sort of by mistake, Silumgar's Command, which is the only command that costs 5 mana, the only command that's worth nothing. And just to remind listeners, it costs black, blue, 3, instant. Choose 2 of the following, counter a non-creature spell, return a permanent to its owner's hand, -3/-3 a creature, or destroy a planeswalker. So you know that's going to be a 2-for-1 right off the bat, more if you use it to mess with combat. Do you guys like this as a spec? Because I sure do.
I don't like that card.
Why not?
It's a mana too much. Ojutai's Command kind of pushes it, but that's because it can bring back a Jace. I'm not too big on Silumgar's Command.
Chess?
Well, it's interesting because I wrote my last article. I reevaluated a lot of the stuff that was in my October rotation stock. Unfortunately, a couple of those cards got destroyed by the event deck, but I re-looked at some of these kind of penny stock cards, I like to call them, and Silumgar's Command is definitely one of them. Jerry Thompson had it in his 5-color Bring to Light deck, and while he didn't like the deck, he liked Silumgar's Command. And it was just a one of in the sideboard, and might not be a sign of things to come, but it is a powerful card. It's dirt cheap at the moment. You're really only gambling like 15 cents a card when you look at buy list.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it is a powerful card, contrary to what you believe, Doug. I think all the modes right now are good enough to play it at five mana. Obviously, it's not going to be a four of, maybe as even a one of, it's not going to be enough to push it, but I'm really just looking at buy list, prices right there. And I think it is good enough to play, right now. And maybe that pushes it up.
Let me devil's advocate here for a second. -3/-3 is super relevant because there are a lot of good creatures that kills. I mean, Mantis Rider being a big one. Bouncing any permanent can set them behind multiple turns on lands, because of, tap lands entering the battlefield. Destroying a Planeswalker outright is fantastic. I mean, since if we think the format is going to be all about Jace, and cards like it. I mean, this card deals with a board where they have an unflipped Jace and a flipped Jace for, it costs five mana. But
it'll answer Anissa because it'll bounce her elemental token and it'll also kill her. I mean, I guess there are corner cases for it. I want to shift over our discussion a little bit.
It is instant, so it has that going for it.
Yeah, so I did want to bring up another card quickly before we finish up, and it is Exert Influence. It's 4 and a blue. It's the converged sorcery. Gain control of a creature if its power is less than the number of colors you converged it for. We were pretty down on this card when it first came out because it's like kind of crappy power-wise for control magics. It's only 50 cents now or less. I think this is one of my favorite specs going into the Pro Tour, and this is why. It is really, really good off of a flashback off of a Jace. And, you know, you're going to have the question of, well, what's better than a Siege Rhino? Well, the better answer is a Siege Rhino that's followed by a Bring to Life for another Siege Rhino. So what beats that? An Exert Influence and then an Exert Influence flashback. Like, once you have an Exert Influence in your graveyard and a Jace in play, that becomes the biggest problem for the opponent to deal with. Because now you're going to be able to steal just about all of the playable threats in the format. And I expect to see Exert Influences become more main decked as people want a way, for example, to remove Deathmist Raptor or fight the green-white Megamorph decks that might be creating big creatures. So I see that happening. It's obviously not good against the red decks, but I don't think you really... I think you side it out there anyway. But I like this card if we're looking at ways to combine Jace with stuff. And that's what Jeskai Black does. It combines Jace with Crackling Doom and Murderous Cut and other stuff. So I like Exert Influence a lot for that reason.
I completely agree. I just picked up, I didn't have any either, and I was waiting for the price to drop because Brian DeMars, Adam Yurchik, all of our resident pros are just crowing about how good this card is. And I kind of didn't do the math. And then when you said, oh, when you flash it back with Jace, I was like, oh yeah, this isn't an enchantment. This isn't a control magic. This is a sorcery that you can flash back with Jace. Just kind of surprised me there. Control magic effects are traditionally very strong. I love that you can steal a Mantis Rider that they were counting on blocking with, and still only have to be playing a three color deck to do so. I do not love stealing Siege Rhino because it is, you know, they already got their money's worth out of it, but it's still a fine way to swing the board tempo. It is basically a two for one because you net one card and they lose a card. So I don't know. It's a great spec. It's one of those things where burning some store credit on it was my decision there. It's hard to recommend as a cash buy. I don't have the buy list up on it right now. Do you guys have any sense of what that is?
I have it. It is 17 cents is the highest buy price that's being spit back at me.
Okay. So you're not risking a zero amount, but you're, I can't see it going much lower.
No, and that's the thing about some of these, I guess, penny stock cards is you basically can trade one for another. I mean, if that is the five converted mana cost sorcery that you're going to be playing over Silumgar's Command or something like that, they are
or
pretty interchangeable. Yeah, right. Or Bring to Light. You didn't risk a lot to go in on Silumgar's Scorn. You bought what, like 30 for $8 or something like that?
Scorn or Command?
Command. I mean, I bought them for like 24 cents or something like that, shipped.
And mine were like 37 cents or something like that.
Yeah. So, really, you weren't gambling a lot. But as far as, you know, you asked the question earlier in the cast for Battle for Zendikar, I do think still strongly that those are the cards that are going to show up the most. Maybe we see some Undergrowth Champion or Kiora or something like that. I have seen Kiora crop up on a few Japanese lists, 400 participants. So it's kind of like a Star City Games just over in Japan. I'm trying to just gather as much information as I can before going into it. But again, it's just the cards that have been creeping up. The Dramokas Command, Anafenza. You made a point about Siege Rhino earlier, Kelly, about Siege Rhino being scarce. Anafenza is drying up real fast, and that's a mythic. And it's really good. It's pretty good in Modern. It's good enough to play in Modern, I should say. So
it's a great card, and I picked up a couple extra playsets of that, and I was posting on the forums a couple times, once back in August and once just last week. It's kind of being like, hey, everyone, don't forget that this card actually exists. It's secretly insane, and everyone, I don't know. I think a lot of cons prices were suppressed by people's expectations, and I think they were over-suppressed for too long. And that's why all of a sudden we're looking at Anafenza the Foremost, a mythic, creeping up in price.
Right, and again, and like we talked about earlier in the cast, it's just compounded by Battle for Zendikar really didn't bring us a whole lot to play with, really. I mean, there's just not that many impactful cards. And so the focus is being shifted back to cons block. And again, Dramokas Command has been increasing despite a print in the Clash Pack. So that's rebounding nicely. It's already buy listing for $6. Anafenza's buy listing for almost $6. Yeah, I mean, those are the cards going into Pro Tour. Again, they're not little penny stock cards, but they're not getting any cheaper, and they're premier cards in Standard right now. So I think those have a little bit more of a ceiling, especially once Pro Tour happens. I think, you know, buy lists will reflect a lot of the demand that's going to be going into that, because I don't see Dramokas Command going anywhere anytime soon. Again, it can see Fringe play in Modern, and Anafenza, Fringe play in Modern. So,
and let's talk about the rotation. Because I think a lot of people are still forgetting how the new rotation is going to work, and I do from time to time. But Khans and Fate Reforged rotate out before Dragons of Tarkir, which means that Khans, I think, when does the Khans even rotate? Like next summer?
So a good site to just for all the listeners and for anyone else out there, it's actually a website called whatsinstandard.com, and I use it all the time because it basically just shows you what's in Standard, and it's pretty important now that this new block cadence is in effect. So until early mid 2016, that's when Khans and Fate Reforge rotate.
That means we have effectively a little over 6 months max with these cards still in Standard. So in a weird way, I'm actually thinking that I'm trying to get out of Khans cards after Oath of the Gatewatch at the latest. I mean, it's kind of funny that like that rotation is going to creep up on us real quick. And then Dragons and Origins don't rotate out until quote late 2016. So I'm really liking putting money in Dragons right now as opposed to Khans. Although I mean, obviously the Khans cards are all showing great gains right now.
Yeah, like I said, it's not obviously. You know, if you had to pick between what card to buy and what set, obviously you're going to favor Dragons of Tarkir and Origins because they rotate later. But I think there's still a really good window of opportunity for Khans cards too, because again, Mantis Rider, Anafenza, all these, even Windswept Heath is starting to rebound from when it was printed in, the Clash Pack, I think. So all these cards are starting to creep back just because people want them. People need them to play Standard.
Well, we had talked about the obvious stuff like Jace and Mantis Rider. We've also talked about some of our non-obvious picks. Whatever goes on at the Pro Tour this weekend, it's going to be pretty exciting to see. If you are an insider, you will know what's going on because Kelly will be reporting back. If you're not an insider, I think this would be a great weekend to try out our service. Until next week, I'm Doug.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Chaz.
And you have been listening to QS Cast.